Translation. In household life, one is ordered to execute many yagyas and furtive activities, especially the vivaha yagya, the marriage ceremony for sons and daughters, and the sacred thread ceremony. These are all the duties of a grihastha, and they are very extensive and troublesome to execute. They are compared to a big hill over which one must cross when one is attached to material activities. A person desiring to cross over these ritualistic ceremonies certainly feels pains, like the piercing of thorns and pebbles endured by one attempting to climb a hill. Thus the conditioned soul suffers unlimitedly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are many social functions for keeping a prestigious position in society. In different countries and societies, there are various festivals and rituals. In India, the father is supposed to get his children married. When he does so, his responsibility to the family is complete. Arranging marriages is very difficult, especially in these days. At the present moment, no one can perform the proper ritual sacrifice, nor can anyone afford to pay for the marriage ceremony of sons and daughters. Therefore, householders are very much distressed when they are confronted by these social duties. It is as though they were pierced by thorns and hurt by pebbles. Material attachment is so strong that despite the suffering, one cannot give it up. Prahlad Maharaj therefore recommends in the Srimad Bhagavatam 755, Hitvatma patram griham annakupam vanam gato yad darim ashrayeta. The so-called comfortable family position is compared to a dark well in a field. If one falls in a dark well covered by grass, his life is lost, despite his cry for rescue. Highly advanced spiritualists therefore recommend that one should not enter into grihastha ashram. It is better to prepare oneself in the brahmacharya ashram for austerities and remain a pure brahmachari throughout one's life, so that one will not feel the piercing thorns of material life in the grihastha ashram. In the grihastha ashram, one has to accept invitations from friends and relatives and perform ritualistic ceremonies. By so doing, one becomes captivated by such things, although he may not have sufficient resources to continue them. To maintain the grihastha lifestyle, one has to work very hard to acquire money. Thus, one is implicated in material life and he suffers the thorn pricks. Om Agyan Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pongum Langayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurun Dinutaranam Shri Rupa Shri Sanatana Bhatta Raguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Rasa Raguna Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Narati Swapanam Tikam Namo Mahavranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurat Vishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tavasmi Arikanata Karmana Manasagira Krishna Kante Tavai Vasmi Uvamehi Bhagatir Mama Govinda Valaviradhe Partiye Tamaham Sada
Tadiyati janatu govindo mandayasa Radhe vrindavanadishe karunamritavahini Kripaya nijapadavjadasyam mahyam pradiyatam tavai vasmi najivami tvayavina Iti vigyayade vitvam nayamam charanantikam Panchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So
very interesting here. Here we hear of one more trouble encountered in the forest of material enjoyment, particularly in the grihastha ashram, and that is the responsibility to perform so many ritualistic ceremonies. Prabhupada mentions here the Vivaha Yajna, that is the marriage ceremony, and the he also mentions, it's not specifically mentioned in the verse, but he also mentions the sacred thread ceremony, Upanayana. And so these are samskaras. Samskara means impression. Rituals to create a positive impression on the grihastha, on the child. That is also born into the family. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there are different types of dharma. This verse speaks of the grihastha ashram. So grihastha is one of the ashrams in the varnashrama dharma system. Varna means occupation, ashrama means social position. As a student, as a householder, as a retired vanaprastha or traveling sannyasi. For each of the varnas and ashrams, there are different dharmas, in fact. There are different religious duties, religious or social responsibilities. So these dharmas, they are not eternal dharmas. Dharma has many meanings. It is a very complex subject. So Sat Sanatana Dharma, that is the eternal Dharma, that is our nature as soul and our duty to serve Krishna. Jivar Surupahoy Krishna Nitya Das. That is Sanatana Dharma. Doing Harinam Sankirtan, that is Sanatana Dharma. Hearing Bhagavatam, that is Sanatana Dharma. Engaging in Bhakti Yoga, that is Sanatana Dharma. These are eternal dharmas. They relate to the soul. They relate to our eternal relationship with Krishna. They are transcendent to any conditioned state. Sankirtan is performed here on earth. It is performed in other planets. Within this material world. So it is common for all varnas and ashramas and even those beyond or below, outside of varnashrama, excluded from varnashrama, it is a duty for them as well. And even in Goloka Vrindavan, beyond any conditioned material state, the state of transcendence, the same activities are performed.
Shravan, hearing about Krishna. Kirtan, singing Krishna's glories or discussing Krishna's glories. Smaran, remembrance of Krishna. Padasevan, Archan. So in Goloka Dham, the same activities are done. Therefore, these dharmas of bhakti, they are called sanatana, eternal. They are called sat. They are called transcendent. That is nitya dharma, eternal religion. The eternal nature of the soul is to serve Krishna. That is nitya dharma. Prabhupada would give an example that just as sugar is sweet, as water is liquid, as fire is hot, so the soul serves Krishna. It is that intrinsic, yeah? The intrinsic quality of fire is heat and light. The intrinsic quality of water is liquidity. And so the intrinsic nature, the intrinsic quality of the soul is to love and serve Krishna. That is the essence of our nature. And you say, well, there are so many souls in this world, they are not serving Krishna. How can it be intrinsic? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example. He says that sometimes water, it, although it is intrinsic nature is liquidity, sometimes it takes on a different state. Temporarily, it will become frozen as ice. Its essential quality is water and liquidity, but temporarily it has been frozen as ice. Or evaporated as vapor. And so, the conditioned souls in this world, we are frozen. Our relationship with Krishna is on ice, so to speak. And therefore we are frustrated. We are not an animate thing, we are living conscious beings. So because we are in this temporary, conditioned, unnatural state of forgetfulness of Krishna, of our relationship with Krishna, therefore we are dissatisfied. We are frustrated. We are identifying with klesha, with suffering. Suffering is relating to the body. Have nothing to do with the soul, but we are identifying with them. Adiatmika, kleshas, miseries caused by our own mental conditioned state. Adibhotika, klesha, miseries caused by identification with this environment in which we find ourselves. Adidaivika, klesha, miseries that we take on from our superiors or devas, those in superior positions to us. But this is a frozen, unnatural state. Our eternal state, nitya swarup, nitya dharma, is to love Krishna. So as long as we are in this conditioned state, then there are some other dharmas for us. Another burden. Hey, have this. You are in a conditioned state. So you have naimitika dharma. So naimitika means it is the opposite of eternal. The opposite of nitya, you get naimitika. Temporary, transitory dharmas. Sanatana dharma is contrasted with this. Naimitika dharma or nitya dharma is contrasted with this. naimitika dharma or temporary dharmas. Temporary dharmas relate just to our conditioned nature. They are important only as long as we are in this conditioned state, in this material body, and identifying with the material modes of nature. So in order to regulate the conditioned state, in order to regulate the conditioned body, then these temporary naimitika dharmas are given to us, and we take them on as a responsibility, as a civilized human being. So Prabhupada speaks of the burdens of grihastha ashram. Within the grihastha ashram, there are dharmas that are duties, religious duties that must be abided by. In all of the ashrams, in all of the varnas. But grihastha ashram particularly carries with it many responsibilities, many of these naimitika dharmas. Bhagavatam saying that these are like thorns and pebbles that prick one as one has to cross a great mountain. So why don't we just give them up? Why carry these burdensome responsibilities? We might think like that. That is hippie mentality. You have two options for giving them up. One is to be irresponsible and in that way unburdened by these naimitika dharmas, acting not as a civilized person. Or your other option is to become a paramahansa. Paramahansa, according to the perspective of the scripture, Paramahansa has a right to give them up because they are no longer conditioned. But as long as we are conditioned, we don't have that right to give them up. If we give them up prematurely, then we are called uncivilized. So Prabhupada has mentioned two as an example. One of the first was marriage. The first mentioned was marriage. So we might think, oh, such a burden, these, you know, temporary naimitika dharmas. I will be unmarried. Okay, if you're unmarried as a brahmachari, then you're taking on those responsibilities, or as a sannyasi. But if you are unmarried but having many, many different relationships, well, that's why the rule is created. That's why that dharma is created, in order to regulate that propensity or to regulate that conditioned need. These rules are given to us in order to regulate our conditioned nature. So as long as we are conditioned, then these rules, these rules that are like a burden, according to this verse of the Bhagavatam, they are a necessary burden. Giving them up means to be purified by them to the extent that one is no longer attached to material conditioning. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, or as a brahmachari, but naishtika brahmachari. You've realized, oh, I don't need to deal with that. I don't need to be burdened by that. And you go from being a naishtika brahmachari to a sannyasi. Then there is no need. That is glorious. From the Bhagavad perspective, that is glorious. But to say, oh, who needs that burden? And not to live as a brahmachari or as a sannyasi or as a paramahansa, but as a uncivilized beast. That is not glorious from the Bhagavad perspective. That is an inglorious life. And one is counted as being, in fact, outside of civilized society. So for one who wants to advance in spiritual life, these naimittika dharmas, these temporary religious duties or temporary responsibilities, they are a necessary burden. They can be compared to shackles that will help to set you free. A shackle, yeah, will... imprisons you, but these shackles, they can, you know, they're a weight, but ultimately they can help to free you. This is very delicate. This is very delicate to understand, because ultimately we know that which will free us is only Hari Bhakti. Only Hari Bhakti will free you. Only Hari Kirtan, only Bhakti Yoga will free you. Mundane morality won't free you from a material conditioned nature. Being truthful, or being non-violent, or being austere, being celibate, it won't give you prema, it won't give you love, it won't transport you back to Godhead. So their benefit is that they are supportive of a life of devotion. And untruthfulness, promiscuity, violence, they are not supportive or compatible with a life of devotion. Does that make sense? So that is their benefit. Their benefit is only that they support a life of Hari Bhajan, of Hari Kirtan. We are not moralists in the sense that we believe that these type naimittika dharmas or rules, dharmas relating to our conditioned state will give us perfection. They won't. Prabhupada would say, the monkey is vegetarian. Right? So that is not great. But the vegetarian diet, it is supportive to a life of bhakti. Hari bhakti. A very wonderful example. I'm sure I've told it before. And the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that there was a brahmachari. He was a very, very brahmachari. He was already austere, but this brahmachari, he had another vrat on top of his brahmacharya, and that was that he would live only by drinking milk. So he had a payovrat. His only sustenance was drinking some milk. So he heard of Sri Chaitanya's confidential kirtan in the house of Srivas Thakur. Prior to taking his kirtan public, Sri Chaitanya would enjoy, would relish kirtan in the house of Srivas with restricted access. Only premi bhaktas were allowed access to those kirtans. And they would happen each night, each evening and through the night. So these were nocturnal kirtans, and they were confidential kirtans. They would chant and dance and cry and roll on the ground. These were all premi bhaktas, so they would all manifest the asta sattvika bhavas, the eightfold symptoms or manifestations of ecstasy. generally these symptoms, they are not manifest in public by advanced devotees. There may be cases where they cannot control them, and then what to do? But otherwise, the devotee will try to suppress these symptoms from public view, so as not to make a show or attract the attention of people who are still materialistically minded. Attention should be to the kirtan itself, to the holy name itself, not to these symptoms of ecstasy. The symptoms are not the ecstasy itself, they are indicators of the ecstasy that has been relished or experienced. Srila Prabhupada is a wonderful example of somebody who would withhold his ecstasy, although there were occasions when he was unable to control it. There were a couple of occasions when Prabhupada went into trance in public view and lost his external consciousness. Once when singing Jairada Madhava in Paris on the Vyasasana, and another time when he was singing Jairada Madhava before Bhagavatam class in Sridhar Mayapur, playing the kartals, leading the kirtan, and then his eyes are closed, his tears are flowing from his eyes, and he stops singing. He's lost external consciousness. So devotees just sit and wait for Prabhupada in Paris. After a couple of minutes, he opened his eyes and said, "That's all right, chant Hare Krishna," and got up off the Vyasasana and went up to his room. That was the end of the class. And in Mayapur, devotees don't know what to do when that happens. As with Sri Chaitanya, devotees didn't know what to do when he went into ecstatic trance. And so one devotee started to sing kirtan. And then Prabhupada became conscious again, got up from his Vyasasana and went up to his room. And there was a lot of debate amongst the disciples afterwards. Some devotees were very angry with that devotee who started the kirtan, disturbing Prabhupada's ecstasy. And they went to Prabhupada afterwards. And Prabhupada was he didn't get into it with them at all. "That's all right. Should we have stopped you? Should he have done the kirtan? The devotees are really angry with him." "That's all right." Just didn't get into it at all. Generally the devotee does not, the advanced devotee tries to withhold these ecstatic symptoms from the view of materialists. Yeah, so Sri Chaitanya's associates, they were all Premi Bhaktas, they were all at that level. And so the doors were closed, locked. Only Premi Bhaktas were allowed. And in the company of other Premi Bhaktas, the kirtan that would take place there, the things that would go on are indescribable to us conditioned beings. So there was one, this brahmachari, celibate, only drinks milk. He approached Srivasa and said, "I'm hearing so much about these kirtans. Please, can you let me come?" And Srivasa says, "Well, Chaitanya doesn't really let others to come in, so..." "No, no, please, 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 I beg you." Shiva said, "Okay, we'll hide you in the room, in a basket. We'll hide you in the corner of the room, in a basket. You can participate from there, from inside the basket. Just don't make any noise. Otherwise I'll be in trouble." So that night the kirtan begins. The devotees are dancing, Shri Chaitanya, and then Chaitanya, he stops the kirtan and says, "Something wrong here. There's something wrong, something's different, something's changed." someone here is not qualified to be here. There's someone in our presence that is not a Premi Bhakta. They are not qualified to be here. And we're not able to relish the same level of ecstasy. He called Shiva. Shiva's come, what's going on? Who's Shiva said, oh, actually, it is true. There in the corner, that basket, we have one brahmachari hiding. Chaitanya ordered him to come out and said, you should leave. You cannot stay here. Not qualified to be here. And Srivas was begging on his account. He's a very, very pure brahmachari. He's very, very austere. And he only drinks milk. He's very, very qualified person. Chaitanya was like, out, go, cannot stay here. So this boy was walking away and he was very, very heartbroken being cast out from this exalted, august assembly. And as he was walking away from the house, he began to cry. And he said, to hell with my brahmacharya. Fie on my austerities, my renunciation, my only drinking milk. If I cannot have the association of these devotees. And Chaitanya had asked a question that was ringing in his head. When did I ever say that by drinking milk, by drinking milk, you will get prema? When did I ever say that just by drinking milk, you will get prema bhakti? So he's cursing his milk drinking, cursing his austerity, and longing just for the association of devotees and understanding that only Vaishnava Seva, Vaishnava Sangha and Harinam, that is the only thing that actually counts. That's the only thing that's really important and valuable. And as he had this realization and transformation of heart, Chaitanya said, call him back. Call him back. Okay. You can participate now. Yeah. His heart had been changed. He'd come to appreciate Vaishnava Seva, Nam Seva, Nam Bhajan, as the real Dharma, the Nitya Dharma, and these other Dharmas as they are temporary, unimportant. They relate to our material conditioned bodies. Although they are necessary, maybe not as extreme as only drinking milk. Shastra doesn't say that brahmachari can only drink milk. It's an additional austerity that one may take on if one chooses. But in Chaitanya's estimation, it's not of any great value. Better eat tasty prasad that has been offered to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath that will purify the heart. In actuality, these Naimittika Dharmas, they are there as a framework to help us. Yeah, to help us in the practice of Nitya Dharma. They are valuable in that they are compatible with the practice of Nitya Dharma. But once they become a burden or an impediment, they should also be given up. Yeah? Generally speaking, the general rule is that they are compatible. Yeah, going through these stages of Varnashrama, it is supportive and favorable to the practice of asadhana bhakti. But if by chance, in some situation, they become an impediment, then without difficulty they should be given up. The example is of Yudhisthira Maharaj. During the Kurukshetra battle, Krishna told him to tell a lie, to call out to Drona, "Hey Drona, your son, Ashwatthama is dead." Ashwatthama is the son of Drona. Krishna said, "Yudhisthira, you say that, you call that out, because Drona is fighting so fiercely, so ferociously, he's just devastating the Pandava army. He has to be stopped. He can't be stopped. But if you call that out to him, he will lose his determination, and then it will be possible to kill him." And Krishna wants Yudhisthira to say it, because Yudhisthira is one who never speaks a lie. He is famous for his truthfulness. If Bhima had have said it, definitely if Krishna had have said it, Drona, he would have sought confirmation from somewhere else. Check your sources. But if Yudhisthira said it, it's not to be questioned, not to be doubted. He will never say anything that is untrue. So Krishna's telling Yudhisthira, call this. Tell Drona, Ashwatthama is dead. And Yudhisthira's like, it's not true. Don't know if I can do that. And so Bhima, he understands, you know, what Yudhisthira's trouble is. So he runs over to a Kaurava elephant, says, "Hey elephant, your name's Ashwatthama." Bang! Ashwatthama's dead. And then Yudhisthira calls out, "Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead." And as he says elephant, Krishna blows his contra. So Drona hears Ashwatthama is dead. So stops fighting, sits down on his chariot in meditation to elevate the soul of his son that has just died. And as he's in that state, Dhrishtadyumna, who was born of a sacrificial fire specifically for the purpose to kill Drona, he ascends Drona's chariot and cuts off his head. So it is said that prior to that incident, Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot or his footsteps, they were always slightly above the ground. How that works, I'm not sure. But in principle, yeah, he was always slightly above the ground. And after that incident, he came to earth. He was always slightly above the ground. He was slightly above the rest of us in society that will fudge the truth from time to time. He came to be amongst us mortals. Prabhupada comments, or Acharya's comment, that the mundane moralists, they say that he came to earth amongst the mortals because he spoke a lie. Acharya say this is not true. He came to be amongst us mortals because he hesitated to follow Krishna's instruction. Not just that he hesitated, in fact he didn't follow Krishna's instruction, he said something else, "Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead." So this is an example of where mundane morality can get in the way of the Nitya Dharma, the essential importance that is to love and serve and be fully surrendered to Krishna. It is not a license for us now to tell lies and break laws and steal and say, "No, I'm doing all of this for So, whereas you have not received that instruction. I remember as a youngster, here in this very temple, some devotee bragging that he had, you know, ridden on the public transport without a ticket. And it was, you know, a prasadam, and devotees were kind of like, yeah. And I said, why? 30 cents or whatever it was in those days. And he was very proud that he had not. But no, we should not be giving Krishna's money to the materialists. That was his argument. That is not, we have not received that instruction. Krishna has not told you to cheat for his service. Yudhisthira Maharaj received that instruction. That was a test for him. For him to tell a lie, that is a test, because he will never speak a lie. For us, the test is that we should tell the truth. That is the instruction we have received. Yeah. The instruction we have is to be truthful, to be non-violent, to be self-controlled. Those are the instructions that we have. We have not another instruction to lie or steal or whatnot. The other example, most famous example, and that is of course the gopis of Vrindavan. One of the other instances where Prabhupada was unable to check his ecstasy was while speaking. It was in fact Varaha Dev's appearance day. And he was speaking about how materialists approach Krishna for material things. And then you can hear it in the tape. Prabhupada's voice chokes up. And he says, but the gopis, they never ask Krishna for anything. And Prabhupada starts crying. You can hear it in the cassette. The gopis never ask Krishna for anything. So the gopis of Vrindavan, they are famous for renouncing morality in Krishna's service. They are married, some of them married women, and they're going to dance with Krishna at Vamsivat in the middle of the night. And Krishna tells them, you shouldn't be here. Married, unmarried, you shouldn't be here. It is socially, morally reprehensible that you come to associate with a boy in the forest in the middle of the night. Quickly go home. That is dharma, Krishna tells them. That is, if you stay here, you are breaking dharma. And the gopis, they replied that, Krishna, we know dharma. And we know that the ultimate purpose of all dharma is to serve you, to love you. Truth is truth. Only because you say something is a certain way. That is truth. So the highest dharma is to love you, to serve you. And so if you're using dharma as an excuse or an argument or a reason to keep us from being with you, then we reject that. That is rejected. So Krishna was very pleased with the Braj Gopis, and after that discussion, that exchange, then he danced with them. And he danced, we have it in our backdrop today, Radha Gopinath are showing their Raslila. He dances, expanding himself between each girl, each gopi. And each gopi thinks that he is dancing only with her. So she doesn't see the other expansions. She only sees the expansion before her. And she thinks, oh, Krishna is giving all of his attention just to me. Out of many thousands of girls, beautiful Raja gopis, all of his attention is with me. How expert Krishna is, how kind Krishna is. Yeah, he gives them that experience of his full and undivided attention in the Rasleela. So, to come to a conclusion, Nitya Dharma and Naimittika Dharma. Nitya Dharma relates to the soul. Naimittika Dharma, temporary dharmas, relate to our conditioned bodies, conditioned minds. The value of Naimittika Dharma, although it is apparently a burden, it still has its value, is that it supports a life of Hari Bhakti. And so we should take it up. We should embrace it as a service, actually. Although, in and of its own, it is mundane. Mundane morality, mundane social responsibility. Because the devotee practices it as a support to their Bhagavad Bhakti, then we can embrace it also as service. All of these duties and responsibilities and samskaras and so on, we embrace that as a service that is helping us in our gradual purification and practice of Hari Bhajan. One final point, though, is that for some people who are outside of Varnashram or on the borderlines or unable to practice it, these things properly, or probably many of us fall into that category in this Kali Yuga, or even those that are not just unable to practice or these things properly, but not able to practice them at all. We should not think that that is the reason that they cannot receive the blessings of Hari Bhakti. Bhakti trumps all of these things. So we take them on as compatible and supportive to a life of devotion. But if somebody is so conditioned that they are unable even to take on these lesser dharmas that are supportive to a life of devotion, we shouldn't think that they are entirely disqualified, because bhakti is so powerful. The Bhagavatam says that even a dog-eater, if they say the holy names of the Lord, they can be purified. Kirata, Huna, Pulinda, Pulkesa, Abira, so many different what are they? Ethnicities, Yavanas, they're mentioned in this verse of the Bhagavatam. Kirta, Huna, Yavana. Yada refers to the Greeks, Huna, either, I think, to Kasha, to the Chinese, Huna to the
Mongolians.
So this Bhagavatam verse refers to all different ethnicities that are outside of the traditional field of Dharma, that is Bharatavarsha, where these Dharmas are practiced. But it says that even people born of these different ethnicities, if they chant the holy names of the Lord, they can be elevated to the topmost position. What was the example I just gave? The dog eater. If they say the holy name, they can be purified. So if there is a lax or a deficiency in the temporary, in the practice of temporary karma, we shouldn't think that that trumps bhakti. It's the other way around. Bhakti trumps the temporary karmas. We have our rules, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. But Garudadev, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, he's not a human, so the human rules or laws don't apply to him. He's an eagle. And what is his food? He eats snakes and fish. Fish from the... Well, at one point he was fishing in the Yamuna River. He was cursed by... what was it? Sobri. Sobri cursed him that if he fishes at Yamuna anymore, then he will die. So Yamuna, although Garuda is not bound by the curses of Sobri, he respected it. And so he would no longer fish in the Yamuna. But in principle, Garuda, he fishes. That is not acceptable behavior for a Vaishnava. Correct? Yeah. Vaishnavas don't go fishing. Garuda does. He's not a human being, so human laws don't apply to him. He's an eagle, and so different laws, yeah? But what I'm saying is that even humans who are by Varnashram standards would not be classified as human. Yeah? The Varnashram definition of human is someone who practices Varnashram Dharma. If you're outside of that, then you're no longer even classified as human. But Garuda, he's an eagle, he's also a devotee, not just a devotee, the highest devotee, the personal vehicle of Lord Vishnu. And so, we could also give other examples of devotees who, by these strict standards, would not be considered to be fully in line, and yet they are accepted by the Lord, and because bhakti is so much more important and superior to these other considerations. Okay, hope I was able to balance all of that, because it's quite, Dharma is always very complex. If you have any comments or questions, yes, Mataji. Your first assumption is correct. Bhakti will purify and transform. So that's also why it is more important. When Prabhupada came to 26 Second Avenue, he was preaching to hippies, and basically he told them to chant Hare Krishna. And he was appreciating that they would chant and they would hear. And that's the most important thing, to hear and chant. But gradually they became purified, and they adopted the very high standards of a Brahminical Vaishnava lifestyle. Yeah. So bhakti will transform. But if there is a lapse, we will consider it a temporary lapse, because bhakti will restore it. If there is a lapse, we should also be very careful about judging the devotee on mundane moralistic standards, because if they are still holding Krishna in their hearts and chanting the holy names, that is to be respected over. Yeah, those are the considerations. Yeah? Yes, Carla?
Just wondering if prema is achievable in this state, in this condition state? Is it something achievable by even at the highest level, is it possible? Like,
yes, it is. It is. Is it achievable in this state? Not in this state, because when we have achieved prema, we're no longer in this state. But is it achievable for common mere mortals or mere humans? Absolutely. That's Chaitanya's teaching. That's Prabhupada's teaching and assurance. That's our goal.
So while we're actually here in this material,
the physical body is not able to contain fully blossomed prema. Up to the point of bhava, the body can handle it one way or other, but fully blossomed prema, the body can't contain that. This vessel is not strong enough to carry that.
So what happens at that point?
You're in the spiritual world. Or you're suppressing it, like Srila Prabhupada, or you're in the spiritual world. But basically this material body is not capable of carrying that.
Yeah. I'm just confused, because if one is not following the ethical way,
yeah. Yeah, this is why this is all so complex. He should not think he's qualified, and definitely not qualified to enter into the spiritual world, unless he's just given it up because Krishna has given him or her an instruction or a test or whatnot. My point is that because of some lapse there, we should not judge them purely on moralistic standards. We should respect that devotion that's still there in their heart, which makes them above any mundane moralist. Does that make sense now? Yeah. Devotee is always special. Apichet sudura charo bhajate mamananyabhat sadur eva samantavya samyadvya vasito hisa. Even if my devotee commits the most abominable action. Sudurachar, most abominable action, sadur eva, they are still to be regarded as sadhu. I am decreeing this. So someone may be very high in their moral standards and ethics, and a devotee may have lapsed. That devotee is still superior because bhakti is more priceless and valuable than anything in this material world, including, yeah. So you chant the holy name once, that's more powerful than thousands of Ashwamedha yajnas or whatnot, yeah.
So can one use that as an excuse?
It shouldn't be used as an excuse. So for ourselves, we cannot take that as an excuse. We should always be aspiring for the highest practice. But in our relationships with others and our judgment of others, we should be very careful. We should always respect devotees at any level. Yeah.
He's talking about the morality, but if you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, like, he was always truthful, but he would still gamble. The Pandavas were so close to Krishna, but they would still drink, as far as I know.
Yeah.
So what we see over there, like, should we follow that one? Like, we should be more close to Krishna, even if they do anything, like gambling, drinking, or like that. We are being told not to do anything of this sort. How they are considered as the best devotees?
Yeah. Okay. Good. So the it's a good point, and I like the way you asked the question. Even if they gamble, if they are still close to Krishna, so that's an important point that. Even if one commits other activities, if there is an affection or an attachment or an aspiration towards bhakti and service to Krishna, that always has to be respected. Now, coming to the other aspect of your question, Kshatriya dharma is different from other dharmas. So for the Kshatriya, gambling, that is acceptable. Can also be hunting, yeah. Kshatriyas hunt, they gamble, they drink intoxication, they have many wives, but even, you know, aside from that, the wives also have maidservants, and so on, yeah, courtesans, and so on. So that's a good example. So, although a kshatriya, you know, has these licenses that are not there for the brahmana, they can still be regarded as devotees. Although these licenses are there, it does not mean that. So the best is that they're not there. The best is that there is a license, but these privileges are not taken advantage of, because they are distractions from love for Krishna. The brahminical lifestyle is most favorable for the practice of bhakti yoga. That's the point. It is the most favorable. When kshatriyas go out and hunt, they have a license, they're allowed to do it, but they also get into trouble doing it. Look at the Mahabharata or the Bhagavatam. So many stories are there of a kshatriya going out to hunt and getting entangled in all kinds of trouble. They're allowed to do it. But it is a terrible distraction and complication. Whether you're a Pandu, whether you are Dasharath, or Ramachandra's father, you're allowed to do it. But there's, you know, many times the Bhagavatam sets up, or the Mahabharata, you know, the story sets up some kind of calamity or curse or reversal of fortune on a hunting expedition. Parikshit Maharaj. Yeah? So that's one. So the same applies with gambling. They're allowed to do it. Yudhisthira is allowed to. As a kshatriya, he is allowed to do it. He has that right. A brahmana shouldn't. Yudhisthira can. But then he loses his kingdom. That's a theme you'll find through not just Yudhisthira. Others as well get into trouble gambling. They get into trouble with drunkenness. They get into trouble. They're allowed to have many wives, but okay, Dasarath gets into trouble because of rivalry between his wife. Chitraketu Maharaj gets into trouble. Yeah? His wives poison his son. And so all of these troubles are shown to us throughout Mahabharata and Bhagavatam when people engage in these activities. So, yeah, they're allowed to, but it's very complicating and entangling. And if you want to practice bhakti yoga, the straight and clear path, then better to avoid. If you don't avoid, you can still be honored as these personalities are. But if you're serious about bhakti yoga, you would better avoid. Yeah, makes sense? Last.
My question is regarding the following of the worldly laws, whether like paying taxes or ticket being sent,
right?
Or there was incident when devotees were stealing flowers and offering to Jagannath. So that being the case, when we offer things to Krishna, there is some, if 1,000 times multiplied, they don't have to suffer sins for so many lifetimes. What is the point in following the mundane laws? Already the institution is corrupt.
So you're saying that if I steal the flowers and offer them, then that person will get 1,000 times the benefit. Is that your point?
There is also a benefit, anyway. And even if they think wrongly, the devotees are doing it that way, right? They're thinking of devotees in Krishna, they're getting spiritual benefit.
Let us break laws, get into the headlines, people will get purified, thinking of devotees.
Because the ministry is corrupt already, the cabinet ministers are corrupt, the ministers
Yeah, that's not for our for us to decide. The king represents Krishna. In this day and age, the king is the... Well, yeah, we still have a... We have a queen. She represents Krishna. And then she has her prime minister representing the queen. So that law is Krishna. We can decide it's corrupt and see it as material. We can see it as Krishna, actually. You choose your vision. Spiritual vision or material vision. Devotees should follow the law. Yeah. Corruption, no corruption. That is not for us to decide. As devotees, we are supposed to be... as a grihastha, those are your response. Those are the, you know, the pricks and the thorns. Yeah, you have a responsibility to do these different yagyas and rituals and so on and so forth. You can say, "I'm a devotee. I'm transcendental to it all." Then don't get married. You're not transcendental because you got married. Means you're conditioned. Means you're attached. And so we have these social obligations and responsibilities to pay tax, to follow the law. That's like a lower level, again, yes, along with these other varnashrama responsibilities as well. We're not transcendental to the law. That is a misunderstanding. We are conditioned souls and we are subjected to these material laws, and as devotees we also have a responsibility to follow the mundane laws, the mundane laws of the state, the mundane law. I didn't think to add that to the I assumed that was understood. We have a responsibility to follow the mundane laws of the state, the mundane rules of varnashrama dharma, as compatible or supportive to our practice of the eternal laws of the eternal principles of bhakti. Okay, thank you all very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya samaveta bhakti vrinda ki jaya nitai gaura premanandi.